You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou, ko Caden Tokawingawa, no mai, haere mai, ki te wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rāpare Thursday. My name is Caden and I'm your host for today. I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined in the studio by producer Pranuja. Efa Akane coming up on the show today. For our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party, I spoke to MP Shannon Halbert about the government's response to the fuel crisis and the McCain factory closure. I also spoke to Dr. Timothy Welch, senior lecturer at the University of Auckland, for a follow-up interview about the government's response to the fuel crisis. And I will have University of Auckland Associate Professor in History, Jennifer Frost, in the studio to talk about the upcoming No Tyrants protest in Auckland this Saturday. For City Counselling this week, News Director Castor spoke to Councillor Shane Henderson about public transport usage amidst the fuel crisis, resource consent changes, and dog control law reform. Pranuja, what have you got for us today?
Today I spoke with Niamh O'Flynn from Greenpeace on the energy crisis in Aotearoa and our next move to renewable energy.
Hea ha o whakaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so get in touch, tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395, or wae mai rāne, give us a call in studio on 309 3879. Ka awa e wariwari I ahi ana koutou, te whakarongo ki ene kōrero ano, he pakehere rukiruki mārunga I te pai tukutuku o Irirangi Pōho, me Heidi Key, 95BFM, irikati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Text in your thoughts on Rima Toru Iwa Rima 5395 or give us a call in studio on Toru Kore Iwa Toru Waru Fitu Iwa 309 3879. Now let's get into the show.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with Labour MP Shannon Halbert.
The government has announced a support package to respond to increasing fuel prices. 143,000 working families with children will receive an extra $50 per week. The Green Party has proposed an alternative support package that includes free public transport for 3 months and targeted relief payments for rural communities, among other suggestions. However, Labour has not outlined its own response, with leader Chris Hipkins stating the onus rests on the current government. And the McCain's processing factory in Hastings is set to close in January 2027, but it is not yet known how many workers and growers the closure will impact. Labour Jobs and Income spokesperson Jenny Anderson says this is part of a broader pattern of closures that have occurred under the current government. For our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party, I asked about both of these topics. I started by asking about his response to the government's fuel crisis package.
Well, it's certainly a start, but unfortunately people like students, people like my mum who are retirees, and people like my niece down south who is a working person without children, they all miss out, but are still feeling the pinch at the pump. It's costing them more every day, and they're struggling.
Is it wrong for the government to exclude beneficiaries from this payment as well?
Well, I think it's important that everyone has a response, because these costs are incurred by every New Zealander who is getting from A to B, who are taking their children to school, who are trying to get to work. And so this is a very narrow plan. The government calls it targeted, but actually it's an ill response to a greater problem that every New Zealander has. And it's important that Prime Minister Luxon really steps up and responds to this.
Labour excluded beneficiaries from the cost of living payment in 2022. What is the difference between excluding people then versus now?
Well, it's important that a response is put in place. Labour put a lot of support in place for beneficiaries and all New Zealanders under COVID, whether you were on the benefit or whether you were a business owner. That's the type of response and leadership that I'm looking to from this government in the energy fuel crisis. And so it's important that everyone is considered in that. I remember very well the level of community support that was put in place, things like food banks and outreach were there to support everyone during the COVID crisis.
The Green Party has proposed free public transport along with relief payments for rural people, specifically as part of their proposed relief package. Do you support these ideas?
I certainly support investment in public transport. Under Prime Minister Luxon, we have seen significant cuts in the hundreds of millions of dollars to Auckland's public transport network. This is a congested city. This is one where people need to get around. And so it doesn't make sense that you make cuts. And so it is important that they front up, invest in public transport and make it affordable for people to take that alternative.
Why hasn't Labor provided its own plan of action to relieve costs like the Greens have?
Well, we're not in government. It's the responsibility of the Prime Minister, of Nicola Willis, of parties that are in government to come up with the solutions. They would have been provided advice from officials. They haven't received all of that advice. And we've encouraged right from the start that all options are put on the table to be considered.
But if this crisis continues into later this year, which is looking likely, shouldn't people know the position of the parties they are being asked to vote for?
Definitely, and closer to the election time, if we're in that position still in a fuel crisis, then we will be releasing policy on that. At this time, it is the government's responsibility to step up to demonstrate to New Zealanders that they can, that they have the leadership, that they have the solutions in place. But at the moment, they seem to be quite slow off the mark.
I want to shift now to asking about jobs lost with the McCain factory closure. How concerned are you about the potential loss of jobs here?
Very concerned. I grew up in Hawke's Bay, so I understand back in the 80s when a number of freezing works were closed, the impact on families there. I saw a number of my family members move to Australia. And that's the proposition that's in front of people that are losing jobs at McCain's and Watties. We know many family members and friends that either have part-time jobs, seasonal work, or full-time employment in those businesses. And so it would be a real loss to the whole region if those jobs were to be cut.
How does this fit into broader changes we've seen in the manufacturing sector in recent years?
Well, under this government, we've seen a number of major closures. I talked about Watties and McCain's, but you know, you look to Kenleith Mill, the Winstone Pulp, Sea Lord, and many other companies reducing their workforce. At a time when unemployment is soaring, there needs to be a response. There needs to be support put in place for businesses to keep afloat during what is a very difficult time.
What are your biggest concerns about these closures? Are you concerned this will drive more workers to Australia?
I'm concerned that the opportunities for people, including young people, to stay in New Zealand is being lost. That they will only, they will see that their only options is to move offshore, that we will find ourselves with a skills gap in New Zealand. I look to the construction sector as skilled workers, the number of apprentices that we've lost over this two-year lull as a result of the decisions and choices that Prime Minister Luxon has made.
So what kind of response would you like to see from the government?
Well, the government needs to take seriously unemployment. When we look at 93,000 young people not engaged in education or training, you know, that is not a future that we want in the short term or medium term here in New Zealand. We see that they are underfunded, the tertiary education system. There's more people wanting to enrol than the government is funding. But at the same time, the government continues to fund tax cuts for landlords and tobacco companies, and those have been their priorities. Their choices are wrong. They aren't looking after everyday New Zealanders, and they aren't giving hope to young people that want to stay here in Aotearoa.
That was Shannon Halbert on the government's response to the fuel crisis and the McCain factory closure.
That was our weekly chat with Labor MP Shannon Halbert.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Councilling on 95BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
Last week saw public transport usage in Auckland reach a 7-year high on accounts of high fuel prices across the country. While high usage bodes well for public transport, the network is facing difficulties around overcrowding. In addition, Auckland Transport is pushing for central government support to lower fares, which ministers have rejected. Auckland Council has also conducted a review into its resource management consenting processes and found multiple spots for improvement. And central government has announced dog control law reforms, which Auckland Council has welcomed given its extensive existing operations in animal control. To discuss each of these issues, News Director Castor spoke to Councillor Shane Henderson.
We saw a 7-year high in public transport usage last week amidst rising fuel prices. The government's argument around the prices for public transport is that they're not going to offer support because people are willing to pay the current prices. What do you make of that argument, and could the government be helping out more with the in the public transport side of things around the fuel crisis?
Oh, yeah, look, in my opinion, the government could absolutely be helping out more. Public transport is a very easy way. It's a very easy lever to pull to help people's cost of living issues. We put in a $50 fare cap, and that's gone really, really well. And we've seen huge patronage uplifts, even in the last few weeks for Auckland. So we're ready and we have more capacity, so we need to reach more families and more people. So, yeah, I would say lower the fare cap would be a great start.
Yeah, and we've seen, even though obviously it's great that there's lots of people using public transport, we've also seen crowding on some buses through main centres and on some of the key routes, with people maybe not being able to get on the bus because of how crowded it is. Is Auckland Transport / Council looking into solutions to this, and what might those look like?
Oh, 100%. So just yesterday I asked Auckland Transport on the Council committee meeting if they have confidence that we can handle a spike in demand, and they absolutely can. So they'll be looking, I think, at things like more routes, sort of frequency, things like that. There's levers that we can pull to help. Make sure if you do get that sort of crowding, please let us know so that we can adjust the systems accordingly.
Yeah, and moving on to the resource consent review, we saw that come through recently. What are the findings of this review, and what does it sort of make of council's resource consent processes?
Yeah, so that went through the Value for Money Committee, and I think there's a general frustration with aspects of resource consenting, and it's not just an Auckland issue, I think it's a New Zealand-wide issue. We have chronic sort of staff shortages, and the staff that we do have working really hard, working overtime to get it done. But we get delays, and that can be a huge issue, especially in a housing crisis. So we've got to see what we can do to make it efficient, obviously as cheap as possible as well. So, yeah, there's plenty of work to do in that space. But kind of watch the space because the review is ongoing.
Yeah, and are there any changes that the council is looking into making right now based on the results?
Yeah, not just at the moment. I think they've got to really analyse those results first. But, yeah, things like trying to up staffing levels or something like that, I think would be a really good idea. That's just my personal opinion. Because the backlogs can be really tough for people.
Yeah, and what are the practical impacts of changing resource consents, especially for someone who maybe hasn't interacted with the consent process, hasn't felt the need to apply for a resource consent, maybe a young person living in the city? What are the practical impacts of these changes happening?
Yeah, totally. You can sort of look at our housing crisis and our inability to build the supply that we need for housing, and then you can work backwards and look at, what are the problems? What are those kind of roadblocks that we have for supplying those houses? And one of those things is a resource consenting process that can be slow, it can be costly, and can be really tough to navigate for people as well. So anything that we can do to fix that problem, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah. And lastly, I wanted to talk about the Dog Control Act reform. We're seeing this change come through at a national government level. But currently, what does Auckland Council do in terms of dog control? And why is this act, I guess, something that Auckland Council is happy to hear about?
Oh, we're delighted to hear about that. The Dog Control Act, you've got to be careful with it because it's an antique. It was passed 30 years ago, and now we've got huge issues in our city around dog attacks and menacing dogs. I just got to take my hat off to our dog control staff, that do a fantastic job, some of the hardest work in the city that they do, and they do it extremely well. So we're very happy to see the reforms, and we hope that we can be in a situation where we can crack down on those dog attacks and we can take a bit more of a zero-tolerance approach, in my opinion.
And council currently spends a good sum on dog control. Will this change enable council to maybe shift some funds away and move things around as the law becomes, I guess, more targeted?
It could, and that will be a debate for another day for my colleagues, because personally I wouldn't want us to be shifting any resources away from a very successful service. In fact, I'd rather us move resources toward it so that we can really get to the heart of the problem. Because, you know, we're having children attacked on the streets in some of these places, and it's really tough. So, the more we can do, the better. I'm just about to use Auckland's fantastic public transport network here, so give me a second.
Well, that's all I've got prepared as well. If you want to just speak briefly to the public transport usage that you're doing right now.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So I'm just jumping on my number 13 bus heading to the city for work. It's a fantastic service. So I tell you what, it's completely full, which is a really great sign for the city. And, I'd encourage everybody to use it. If you haven't tried it, give it a good old crack, because it's a hell of a lot better than the memories of a lot of people in the city.
That was Auckland Councillor Shane Henderson speaking to News Director Castor about public transport usage amidst the fuel crisis, resource consent changes, and dog control law reform.
Have you tried mindfulness? Try mindfulness.
City Counselling on 95 BFM.
So around, up to 8,000 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the B. Text in your thoughts, 5395.
Tu mai ngarangatahi Korero Māori, Korero Māori Korero Māori, Korero Māori Korero Māori.
Jazz Cigarette, Bob Hope, Dubage, Jar Rastafari, Wacky Backy, Mez, Mary Jane, Marley, Sheba Cheba.
Whatever you call it,
Muggles.
Marijuana Media has you covered. Every Thursday on 95BFM Drive, join Chris Fowley from Normal for the good word on law reform, cannabis in the media, and the latest in green science. Marijuana Media, 4:20 every Thursday on 95BFM Drive, thanks to The Hemp Store. Visit them at 253 K Road or shop online at hempstore.co.nz.
Call your friends. Swedish alt-pop icon Robin is dropping her new album, Sexistential, and you can be among the first in the world to hear it.
Public Bar are hosting an intimate listening party on Thursday, March 26th to celebrate the release, featuring DJs Half Queen and Zeki.
Arrive early for a front-to-back album listen and free merch. Robin, Sexistential Listening Party. Public Bar, Thursday, March 26th from 7 p.m. Get your tickets now from Under the Radar.
The visionary Kim Gordon is back with a record that tells you what to do on the packet. Play me, and we're happy to oblige because it's a banger. Tell me what you want, you had to see. Your mates on 95BFM Drive are giving away copies of the album all week to B-card holders. So tune in, turn on those Tardinger, and await your cue to enter. Play Me, the new album from Kim Gordon. Available now wherever fine music is sold.
You think you just fell out of a coconut tree?
The Wire.
On March 28, Democrats abroad members across the globe will be organising and participating in anti-Trump administration protests as part of the No Tyrants movement. This aligns with a wave of No Kings protests expected to take place across the United States on the same day. Today I have Jennifer Frost, Associate Professor in History at the University of Auckland, to talk about the protest happening in Auckland this Saturday. Jennifer, I believe this is your first time organising a protest. What about this current moment inspired you to take a stand?
Thank you for asking me to speak to this. So in my voluntary position as chairperson of Democrats Abroad New Zealand, we focus really on getting out the vote from New Zealand, so helping Americans actually of both parties or any party to vote. And that's really comfortable for me because I go to protests and I also research and teach social movements and protests, but I myself have never organized a protest. And at this point in time, I really want us here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, to demonstrate solidarity with people all over the world, and especially in the U.S., that we are on their side and we're supporting these efforts. I was hoping somebody else would step up to do it, and when it was clear that nobody was going to do it, I put my hand up.
For those who haven't heard of this movement before, could you talk about the No Tyrants protests, or No Kings protests as they're sometimes known, that have occurred in the United States and other places?
Yes, so No Kings was initiated by a group called Indivisible. And this is a grassroots, people-powered, nonviolent civic organization. It's committed to nonviolence, it's anti-authoritarianism, and it's really trying to build an inclusive democracy in the United States. So their analysis of what happened in the 2024 election was not that it was an embrace of Trumpian authoritarianism. Instead, it was a rejection of the status quo. And of course, the majority of American voters did not vote for Trump. In fact, more people didn't vote than voted for Trump. And so you can't argue that this was something that reflects the consent of the governed. So that was their analysis. And they thought, given what was to come, because everybody knew that Trump would unleash authoritarian forces, the thought was we need to mobilize everyday people at the grassroots in their localities to protest this regime.
So as I kind of alluded to in my intro, Auckland's not the only place having a protest on March 28th. Where else are protests happening?
So there is over 3,000. I think some people are even estimating 4,000 protests around the U.S. and around the globe. And they're happening in small towns, in big cities, and all sorts of, you know, small protests, large protests, all sorts of different kinds of protests. And again, I think this is the brilliance of Indivisible, is that their structure is decentralized. So it really encourages people wherever they are to step up. And in fact, they're saying their motto is courage is contagious. And their motto is to step up and do what works for your environment, what works for your folks on the ground. And I think that flexibility is really important. So there's been a lot of local organizing, and then they've organized these big national and global days of defiance. So there's been, this is the third No Kings or No Tyrants, and the first in June got about 5 million people out. The second in October got 7 million people out. And the thinking here is that alongside everything else, you know, writing to your representatives, consumer boycotts, voting, that protest matters in a regime that wants to keep people divided, disempowered, and disengaged. And we know protest brings people together, it builds solidarity, it builds community, people get to feel agency. So it really matters, these protests.
And is the protest that is happening in Auckland just for Americans who might be living here to show up to, or are you encouraging New Zealanders and others and allies to turn up as well?
Our main focus is mobilizing folks from the U.S. just because we don't do this very often. I think the last time there was a big march was, well, there was Black Lives Matter in 2020. Before that, there was the Women's March. We haven't done a lot of these since, really since COVID, I think. And so that is the primary idea, is to bring all these folks from the U.S. together. But yes, everybody's welcome. It's just making sure that everybody's sort of on the same page. These events have actually been quite positive and creative and joyful around the world. And in fact, what's important about that, and there has the lack of violence that in these protests, is that it undercuts the Republicans' arguments that these are violent, you know, dangerous sort of protests. It undercuts that and says, no, we have a different vision of the world we want to make, and you're going to see it at our protests. So yes, everybody's welcome, but it's getting into sort of the vibe of the event.
Are you optimistic that this movement could have an impact on the Trump administration?
I think it already is. So in addition to building community, and again, community and solidarity is being built in all these localities against ICE, again, in these consumer boycotts, we have people suing the Trump administration, you know, providing support to one another. So we already are seeing, I think, an expansion of civil society in the U.S., and it's important to challenge, you know, the regime, but it also shows the extent of the opposition. When people are willing to come out into the streets and show their face and have their sign, that shows he is unpopular. His regime is unpopular. What he's doing is unpopular. And it's quite famous, this 3.5% rule that these political scientists, Erica Chenoweth and Maria Steven, have put out there. The idea, and they study civil resistance, and their idea and their theory or rule is that since 1900, if you can get 3.5% of the population out protesting, you will get regime change. So we're nowhere near that for the United States, but like I said, it keeps building, 5 million, 7 million. Everybody's hoping even 14 million will be come this time. And we're building toward that strategic change and shift.
And if people who are listening to this interview are interested in coming on Saturday, where should they go for more information?
Well, happy to have you email me at the University of Auckland, j.frost@auckland.ac.nz. But it's going to be at the Albert Park Band Rotunda, 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. We've got speakers, we have music, and we have even a slam poet coming.
Wow, that sounds very exciting. Thank you so much for your time today. That was Jennifer Frost, Associate Professor in History at the University of Auckland, on the No Tyrants protest that's happening in Auckland this Saturday, March 28th. And just to repeat, the event will take place at 3 p.m. at the Band Rotunda in Albert Park, Auckland Central.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
And we'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the beat. Text in your thoughts, 5395.
I'm not sure of our position on that particular bill, so I can't comment on that right now.
It's a kind of bird. This is the bird they're endorsing for Bird of the Year.
The Wire.
Greenpeace is calling on the government to move beyond what is described as a band-aid solution to the energy crisis. Instead, they're pushing for long-term investment in renewable energy and public transport. I spoke with Program Director Niamh Flynn at Greenpeace Aotearoa about their concerns. Greenpeace has described the government's response to the energy crisis as a bit of a band-aid fix. Can you unpack what that looks like in practice?
I mean, as you can see from the climate impacts that people across the country are facing today, we're in a climate crisis, and in a warming climate, what we really need is to figure out how our country can have energy security while not making the same crisis worse. And right now, the government is continuing down this path of total fossil fuel frenzy instead of investing in the renewable energy that we need to get through this.
Concerns have been raised about growing reliance on fossil fuels. What recent decisions do you think are contributing most to that?
The last 2 years making our country more fossil fuel dependent. You can look at some examples like cutting the clean car discount. So now electric vehicles are a lot less accessible to people, notably after Luxon himself used the discount. Cancelling cycleways, cutting public transport, changing the fuel efficiency standards and increasing speed limits. So all across the board, making it harder for people to move around the country in a sustainable way. But the big one is also wanting to spend billions on an LNG import terminal, which would lock us into a future of fossil fuels, really expensive fossil fuels, when what we know is that actually wind and solar are the cheapest forms of energy generation.
The government has framed some of these decisions as around affordability and economic growth. How do you see that trade-off?
I mean, I don't really think it's affordable for New Zealanders who are already struggling with the cost of living to then pay a tax in their energy bills for the new LNG terminal that the Luxon government's proposing. Certainly, I don't think any New Zealanders who are having to fill up their petrol vehicles at the pump are feeling like Luxon is doing much to make the world more affordable for them in this energy crisis.
Greenpeace has suggested alternatives like expanding public transport and cycleways. How achievable are those in the short term?
One of the problems is that successive governments in Aotearoa have not just got on and done the alternative changes that we need to see to have a fossil-free society. So we need to really just get on and start building the alternatives, the cycleways, the public transport. I mean, you could immediately make public transport free, and that would immediately make public transport more accessible for New Zealanders. But to actually transition, we need government decisions that actually allow us to get on and do it.
There has been a push for more renewable energy like wind and solar. What are the main barriers slowing that down?
I think really it's the government's deciding to just heavily invest in wind and solar energy. I mean, we saw recently that we had two major wind and offshore wind energy companies coming to look at Aotearoa. We've been called the Saudi Arabia of wind. However, this government has chosen to really push to try and get seabed mining happening in the South Taranaki Bight. As we can't have offshore wind and seabed mining. So it's a really clear choice that we need to make as a country. And the government backs the horse of seabed mining instead of renewable wind energy.
Do you think there are risks in moving away from fossil fuels too quickly, or is the bigger risk not moving fast enough?
The biggest risk is not moving fast enough away from fossil fuels. We've had years of knowing that we need to transition away from fossil fuels. The best time would have been decades ago. The next best time is now. We really need to make that transition so that New Zealanders are not energy insecure.
How important is this move with gas prices rising across the country?
What we're seeing is New Zealanders unable to move themselves around the country, and that's particularly it particularly makes rural New Zealanders vulnerable, and people who are already struggling with the cost of living very vulnerable.
For everyday New Zealanders, what would these changes look like?
For everyday New Zealanders, it would be great if we could see cheap, reliable public transport options so that we can get to school and work and move about the country in a way that's not damaging the planet and also is affordable. And that could be done immediately.
That was Neve O'Flynn from Greenpeace on the energy crisis in Aotearoa and our move to renewable energy.
The Wire.
Last week, I spoke to Dr. Timothy Welch, senior lecturer at the University of Auckland, about New Zealand's reliance on cars in the face of a fossil fuel crisis. Earlier this week, the government announced a fuel crisis relief package, which includes giving 150,000 families an extra $50 a week to help with fuel costs. The Green Party proposed an alternative support package that includes free public transport for 3 months on top of targeted relief payments. I spoke to Dr. Timothy Welch again, but this time about the government's response and alternative proposals that focus on increasing public transport usage. I started by asking if he could give me an overview of what is in the government's relief package.
The relief package is essentially a $50 payment. It kind of is in the form of a tax credit that will go to working families, so those that have someone that's employed meeting a maximum income threshold, and that will be a $50 kind of cash payment to those households.
Why do you think free public transport is a better option than what the government has proposed?
Well, free public transport is really kind of getting at the heart of the issue, which is we are looking at a massive petrol supply problem. So we're kind of in uncharted territory in terms of how much fuel we have left in the country and how much is on its way. And so what we really need to be considering at this moment is how do we preserve the stocks we currently have? A $50 payment is going to help with cost of living for some people, but it's not going to do anything to reduce our consumption of fuel. On the other hand, if we can reduce the cost of public transportation, provide a meaningful alternative that anybody can afford to driving, then we significantly reduce the pressure on fuel consumption for the whole country.
The Greens have proposed free public transport for 3 months. Do you agree with this proposal?
Well, it's something that we've done in a way before. We haven't quite gotten to free, but we've tried during COVID, or we did during COVID, reduce fares to half price. And just from this experience alone, we know that that generated a significant increase, about 7% more public transport trips. And we know that at least 3% of those trips were coming directly from cars and taxis. So we know that people are getting out of their cars and moving to public transportation. So it's reducing the demand. And we know that a significant portion of people who were low income or in subsidized housing were using that reduced fare as a new way to get around when they felt like they couldn't afford public transportation. So we know it benefits a group of people that definitely need lower cost transport options, and we know it's effective in getting people out of cars, which in turn would be effectively reducing the demand for fuel. And we know that the cost of a program, even for 3 months, is much lower than the $50 payments the government is currently doing.
What about rural families or people who don't have access to public transport?
Yeah, so the argument that not everyone would benefit from free public transport is actually one of the strongest arguments for making it free. If we look at fuel consumption, we know that 95% of petrol goes to light vehicles, and this consumption is primarily in our three biggest cities. And in those cities is where we have the best public transportation. So if we can get people in our cities out of their cars onto public transport, that means we've reduced the pressure on our stocks for the whole country and thereby have more availability for everyone that can't access public transportation and hold prices more steady for everybody in rural areas as well, and tradies and anybody else who really can't use public transportation as an alternative. So making it free and getting more people in our cities on public transport is a benefit to the whole country.
You mentioned the similar policies we've seen in New Zealand. Even if they haven't gotten all the way to free public transport, the reduced price of public transport, for example, during COVID. But have we seen this full idea, the idea of free public transport, work anywhere in the world?
A number of cities around the world have used this model. Some use it currently, some have tested it for short periods, and the results are fairly uniform. What we see is a strong uptake in public transportation. It's not just that it costs less for the individual, but it reduces the barriers to using public transportation. There's less concern about how people will pay for it, the method of payment, taking on and off, all of those things that are complicated for a person and may just keep them in their car are relieved. So we know from multiple cities across the world that free public transportation will actually increase ridership and reduce driving.
Is there anything else you would want people who are suspicious of free public transport to know?
The fact is that if we can reduce public transport, if we can make it free, it's something that we can do very quickly. So this is something that essentially could be done overnight and have an immediate impact on our fuel consumption. And it targets a much broader range of the public than our current $50 payment does. We can benefit students, beneficiaries, single adults, people who are out of work, people who are retired. So everyone can have access to better transportation options, or at least a larger group can, than the programs that we currently have in place.
That was Dr. Timothy Welch, Senior Lecturer at the University of Auckland, on a follow-up interview about the government's response to the fuel crisis.
Well, if you want to save money and health, it's very simple, you know. It's like shoot all the patients and shut all the hospitals.
The Wire. That was The Wire.
Era te hotaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I korero mai ki maua mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on The Wire for Ngā Pare Thursday. Nei rā, hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you to everyone who spoke with us today. Labour's Shannon Halbert, Councillor Shane Henderson, University of Auckland's Jennifer Frost, Greenpeace's Neve O'Flynn, and the University of Auckland's Dr. Timothy Welch. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is the 1-4 with Sophia. But first is Pull Up to the Bumper from Grace Jones.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.